Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey, and I am honored once again by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. The Business Creators Radio Show, you can probably hear, is not one of those podcasts that's recorded in some $25,000 high-quality Hollywood studio with soundproof walls. We go where you go to have those mastermind meetings and aha moments that can change your trajectory or at least bring you a little bit closer to serving from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. So I want you to imagine yourself maybe sitting in an outdoor cafe, which is where I am right now, and being that third person sitting at a table while masterminding is happening and capturing those pieces of wisdom that could be the answers to questions you didn't even think to ask yet. So today we're going to be speaking about a topic that is very near and dear to me and is a core of all of the work I do in both of the businesses I've involved in. And it's about the idea of making hard conversations easy. So it's an often overlooked yet fundamental element of leadership called emotional clarity. So our guest, her name is Divya Ramachandran, and you are going to absolutely love what she has to say here. First of all, I'm going to give you a little bit of background about her. She's a distinguished leadership coach transitioning from a successful career in tech to empowering leaders of tech startups. She has quite a story. There was an epiphany she had while she was in computer engineering at UC Berkeley that I'm going to let her tell you about in just a second. But as far as her current work, she specializes in guiding tech startup leaders, leveraging her expertise in energy awareness, cognitive behavioral coaching, and emotional intelligence to foster trust, connection, and effective communication within teams. Her work focuses on helping leaders achieve clarity, resolve conflicts, and enhance productivity, fundamentally believing in the power of understanding oneself to lead others effectively. I hate reading stuff off the screen, but I love reading stuff like that. Divya, come on in. The weather's fine.
So great to be here. Thanks so much, Adam.
Okay. Your full story and your full bio are so impressive that they might actually melt the Business Creators Radio Show if I said them. In fact, it's so impressive, I'm not sure I'm worthy to be in your presence, and this is my place. So what we like to do here, before we dive into some of the elements of this whole thing about emotional work and how we achieve emotional clarity through making hard conversations easy, is I'm going to let you pull open the curtain a little bit and tell our listeners a bit about your journey and what's brought you here today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion.
Thank you so much for that very generous intro. I'm so glad to be here and also to be in the presence or among the ranks of some of the other guests you've had here as well. So yeah. Thank you. So telling you a little bit about myself, I like to think about my career journey, or even starting back from my academic journey, as a transition moving from technology and products to people. And it's been marked by these pivotal moments in my life where I suddenly realized I was in the wrong place for what I wanted to do. So I studied computer engineering in college, and I was largely influenced by the community that I grew up in. I'm the daughter of immigrant parents from India, and in our community, it's very kind of a stereotypical way you might think about our community is that you're kind of raised to either be an engineer or a doctor. So I followed the engineering path. Right. And I landed admission to UC Berkeley, which was my dream school, to get my PhD after my undergrad in computer science. And I was thrilled. It was like absolutely what I wanted to do more than anything else. But it was when I got there that it was kind of a rude awakening where I realized I wasn't very excited to solve technical problems. And here I was committed to getting a PhD and researching a technical problem and feeling really passionate, expected to feel really passionate about doing this. But that's when I realized I was much more interested in problems related to people. And so I found a niche for my own research that was in human-centered computing, also known as human-computer interaction or user experience design, and kind of ended up finding a problem in there where the goal is to use technology and design products that will address human problems. And so you really go deep on the human problems. So I worked in the area of rural healthcare and rural education, and this was kind of where I ended up honing a lot of those skills and even learning a lot about design. And so after that, I live out in the Bay Area in California, where it's full of startups. And so after that, I joined a startup, sort of just starting at the beginning as a user experience designer and working my way up. And so I was doing design, this is software design and interface design, user research, that kind of thing, and eventually started having to wear different hats in product management as well. And so about, you know, flash forward about a decade, I was leading a team of product managers and designers at an AI startup, and worked with an executive coach. And this was kind of a facilitated group of a number of heads of product. And I thought we were going to get together and share tips about how to do our work. And it ended up being something completely different. This coach really encouraged us to look inward and think about leadership from the inside out. And I found it to be very transformational. I found it to be really interesting as well. I was just kind of mesmerized by a lot of these ideas. And most of my day at this point was dealing with the people on my team, right? Helping them, motivating them, providing them clarity. And so it was all about leadership. So it's much more, you know, even further down the people, towards the people end of the spectrum. And one thing led to another. I ended up leaving that job, partly due to some of the insights I got through the coaching program, but also just a lot of things in my life were happening where it was just aligning, where I knew that job was not only not adding value to my life, it was starting to detract from the life that I imagined myself having. And so I left, not sure what I wanted to do, except knowing that I had this feeling I wanted to be engaging with people, with providing a service that was more meaningful and kind of designing a transaction that was uniquely mine and providing that service to others. And as I started thinking about coaching as an option, coaches just started popping up in my life. And it's interesting how that happens sometimes when you put an idea out, you start seeing it more around you. I took a training course, and from the first day of the course, it was so clear to me that this is what I wanted to do. So I started my business alongside getting trained. And so over the last 5 years, I've been working, as you said, with leaders of all kinds, mostly at tech startups, and helping them find clarity to get through some of the hard stuff that they have to do.
Yeah. And that's, I think that, you know, the whole thing about communication and the value of emotions is extremely important. Now, I was speaking with one of my consulting clients this morning, and one of the things that came up, we were actually doing some design in terms of topics for his podcast, and he speaks on issues that are not entirely dissimilar from yours. One of the things that came up is that whenever you have two or more people who interact with each other, that creates a dynamic. I mean, the only way there's not really a dynamic, if it's just somebody you see at the bar you go to after work on happy hour and you say, hey, what's up? Not much. How are you? But anything else, there is a dynamic and there is a sort of relationship. Now, dynamic is a term used in certain communities to, to describe, for example, the layout of a relationship between people who do naughty things together. That's where the word dynamic often comes in when it comes to interpersonal communication. But when we translate that to the rest of the world, we all have a dynamic. It could be supervisor to employee. It could be colleague to colleague. It could be friend to friend. It could be prospective romantic partner to prospective romantic partner, husband and wife, husband and husband, wife and wife, any sort of thing. There's going to be a dynamic and there's going to be a need occasionally to clarify and evolve that dynamic. So this is where I really got interested in your topic about emotional clarity, because I have found that these dynamics tend to struggle when folks are either completely unwilling to acknowledge the reality and their truth behind their emotions and be open to the possibility that it's a natural part of the evolution of the dynamic, which you could also call a relationship, a friendship, a business relationship, a partnership, a joint venture agreement, whatever it is, client vendor. So what I'd like to do is just have you tell us a bit about how emotions play into this. I know you have a concept called the hierarchy of clarity, and perhaps that's the place to insert this. So I just asked a hell of a long question, and I'm going to let you give whatever answer you want.
That was amazing. I loved a lot of the thoughts that you're sharing here.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that we're on the same page about some of this stuff.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Any two people, put them together, there's a dynamic that's there. And
yeah.
75% or more of the conversations I'm having with leaders is about somebody else, is about some kind of interpersonal dynamic or conflict that is creating stress. And so this is essentially the biggest challenge that every leader is working with at any given time. And this might be with a direct report. It might be with a peer. It might be with a manager. It might be with an investor or somebody you're trying to pitch or sell to. So it could be anyone. But this sort of dynamic is constantly coming up. And often it comes up that it's also a dynamic with somebody at home that's creating stress at work, right? So all the time. And so I'd say that the way I think about it as a leader, you have to be pretty good at two different things. One bucket is saying hard stuff. So having those real candid conversations about accountability or advocating for yourself or your ideas or figuring out a decision or dealing with conflict. You have to be able to have those conversations. And then the other thing you have to be able to do is do hard things. And by that, I mean, you've got to chip away at these kind of complex problems, ambiguous problems, and generate clarity. And sometimes that's for yourself, but also you have to be able to generate clarity for others, the people that you're working with. And so both of these involve conversations with other people.
Right.
And so in the work that I'm doing, you know, I call both of these buckets hard things, and most of us would, because we feel a lot of hard emotions when we're trying to do these things. We feel anxiety, we feel fear, we feel dread, we feel nervous, we feel angry, we feel frustrated, all of these feelings that generally we consider hard feelings to feel. And in order for those conversations or those actions that we need to take to get easier, we need to develop a healthier relationship with those emotions. And by that, what I mean is we have to first acknowledge that those emotions are there. So many of us many people believe that emotions kind of don't belong in the workplace, right? Don't bring your emotions to work. Well, emotions are coming with you to work, whether you want them there or not.
Correct. Correct. The idea that you leave home at home when you come to work is preposterous. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. So your emotions are coming with you, and you need to be able to acknowledge that they're there, and you need to acknowledge that they're there for other people as well. And you don't do that by kind of telling people, hey, stop being emotional or leave your emotions out of this. You just simply can't. You know, emotions 101, your emotions are like clouds in the sky. They show up and then they leave, and you cannot decide when they're going to come, and you cannot really decide when they leave. The only thing you can do to help those emotions is to actually acknowledge and then accept them. So that's the second step. So first step is acknowledge that they're there. Second step is actually acknowledge them. Sorry, I said that wrong. Acknowledge, first step, accept, second step.
Right.
So accepting our emotions means we're not resisting them. We're not basically walking into a meeting where we're fully anxious and saying, hey, I'm not scared. I'm not anxious at all. We're actually saying, oh my gosh, I'm anxious, but I'm going to go and have this meeting anyway.
Right.
And so that's the second step. There's a whole bunch of different, you know, steps within these, but that's the second part of this, is accepting it. And then the last one is when you've been able to have that, when you have that relationship with that emotion, you've accepted that it's there and it's okay for it to be there, to actually choose to act in alignment with that emotion. That doesn't mean let that emotion drive you. It means you notice it's there, and then you're consciously choosing how are you going to act, knowing that that emotion is there no matter what. And so these are kind of the steps that we're taking to build that emotional clarity. And so we can actually act in a way that's better and more it's going to serve us better. So let me give you an example of this. Feedback, giving feedback to somebody on your team or you know somebody that you've hired. So let's say that you're in a situation where you have somebody on your team and you want them, you're observing what they've been doing and it hasn't been, it's not meeting your expectations and you need to give them feedback. So a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people really, really dread giving feedback or give feedback in a way that's not very effective. And why is that? Well, depending on how you're feeling when you're going into that conversation to give them feedback, you're telling yourself something about the situation. And depending on what you're telling yourself about the situation, you're going to show up in a different way. For example, if you're walking in and saying, well, I hired them to do this thing that I don't know how to do. So who am I to tell them how to do it better, right? If you've got self-doubt clouding you and your thoughts, well, then you're not going to be able to show up there and say like, look, this is what I expect of you and this is what I want to see. And you're not going to give them the feedback. You're not going to do them the favor of giving them the feedback that they need to hear. So your emotion is getting in the way of that. And if you notice that, hey, I've got self-doubt around this, then you can actually have a conversation with them and say, hey, I'm not the expert here. And I know you are, but can you tell me a little bit more about why you're doing it this way? Because this is what I would have expected.
Yeah.
And so that kind of shifts the whole conversation when you're actually acknowledging the self-doubt, both to yourself and possibly to the other person. Or another example of that is you're coming in and you're watching somebody do, you're watching this person on your team not performing in the way you want them to, and you're feeling frustrated and just like, gosh, they should really know better. How could they not be doing this the right way? And you're feeling frustration and even resentment towards them. Well, if you can notice that that feeling is there, then you have the opportunity to ask yourself, wait, have I actually told them what I expect of them? And if I have, well, then it becomes an almost easy conversation. You can say, hey, remember how we set this expectation? What you're doing is not meeting that expectation. Let's talk about it. You can talk about it more objectively.
Right. Or
you realize, hey, I haven't set the expectation and that's on me. So let me reset and let me tell them clearly what I want them to do and give them another chance to do it. So that's where that emotion and the conversation and the emotion are connected.
Absolutely. So there's one of the many reasons that the Business Creators Radio Show is an audio only show is every so often somebody will say, you know, you should really do video. It'd be so much more. I say, I don't freaking want to. And it's my show. I'll do whatever the hell I want. Going back to the original concept of the term podcast, it's named after the iPod, which was an audio device. And the driver behind the iPod is when we first moved from written blogging to the idea of audio blogging. It wasn't video blogging, it was audio blogging. So podcast to me refers to audio. But I'll tell you the other two reasons are sometimes my guests will say something that's just so amazing that I actually have to stand up and walk around and do the raise the roof gesture like I was doing as you were speaking. And when I wasn't doing that, I was taking down some of the aha moments that I was having from what you just said. Again, our conversations are not interrogative Q&A, although I make every effort to include as many of the points that the guests give us under suggested interview questions one way or another. But there are four things that jumped out at me when you shared all that. The first is, and I've said this many times, there's no such thing as the truth. So I'll say that again and let it sink in for 5 seconds. There's no such thing as the truth. Here's what I mean. Facts are something that can be proven or disproven scientifically, empirically, analytically, or otherwise. Truth is how we view those facts through the lens of our own experiences, education, background, and what has formed our belief systems and our mechanisms for how we go through life, including conversations and dynamics. Now, sometimes people like to argue with me and say, well, yeah, but there is a such thing as the truth. No, there isn't a such thing as the truth. They're the two practical examples I give you. I only need to give you one, really. Let's say we were at a four-way intersection. I'm standing on one corner, you, Divya, are standing on another corner, and our mutual friend Jake is standing on a third corner. And all of a sudden, we all hear a crash. Two cars collide in the middle of the intersection. Now, where are we all? Me, you, and Jake. We're all in three different corners. You with me so far? Mm-hmm. So when we turn and look, one of us may have actually been watching the intersection as the crash happened. The other two of us may have heard the crash and then turned to see what was going on after it happened. We're all going to be looking at it from different angles, so we're going to see different things. So assuming this is one of those accidents where the police actually show up and they take witness statements, we could all give witness statements that contradict each other's. And then we could all take polygraph tests. We could give our mutually contradictory views of what happened with that accident. We could all pass a polygraph. And that's because polygraph machines do not fact check. They test for signs of prevarication, which means intentional or proactive lying or fabrication. But if we all believed we saw what we saw, even though we all saw different things, we all have that truth, so we will pass that lie detector test. That's the first thing. The second is the bifurcation between a reason and an excuse. So Divya, have you ever heard the expression "that's an excuse, but it's not a reason"?
Yeah.
Okay, that's incorrect. Absolutely incorrect. I do not subscribe to that at all, because a person's reasons for doing what they do, saying what they say, believe what they believe, are their reasons in alignment with their truth based on how they were formed, how they came up, how they've gone through the world, how they view things, their belief systems. The excuse part of it is, does that make it justifiable? Does that make it acceptable? I mean, I can have a reason for doing a lot of things. That doesn't mean it's going to be excusable. But at the same time, I like to say, legally, homicide can be justified. I think you're aware that there are certain situations where you could pull a gun out and blow somebody away and you wouldn't even get arrested.
Yeah.
You know that, right?
Yeah.
There's two words to describe that. It's called self-defense.
Yep.
And if you can demonstrate self-defense, you might not even get arrested for like ending somebody's life in public with witnesses. So homicide can be justified. So now we have to look at the reason why that happened. And then we look at, is that justifiable? Reason versus excuse. The third is this whole concept of constructive criticism. Now, part of my truth is that, yes, I know people in my family listen to my podcast, and I've shared this with them before, so I'm not bitching about stuff that happened in my childhood. I'm just saying what happened. When I was introduced to the phrase constructive criticism, it was introduced to me as me being accepted to tolerate bullying from other kids because my parents were friends with their parents. So I've never believed in constructive criticism. When I hear the term constructive criticism, I say, that's an oxymoron. You're constructing somebody while you're tearing them down, because criticism is an act of bringing somebody down. Mm-hmm. Feedback, mentoring, coaching, these are positives.
Yeah.
So you can have constructive feedback, constructive mentoring, constructive coaching. Criticism is a teardown, no matter how you look at it. It cannot be constructive, in my view, according to my truth. You may disagree with that through the lens of your truth. And then the fourth is, when is feedback wanted versus not wanted? So a couple years ago, I had a woman take me in the back alley of Las Vegas downtown and shoot me 161 times. Now, do you know what I mean by that?
No.
I hired a professional photographer to build my portfolio. And we went to various scenes in downtown Las Vegas, to some cafes, to a bookstore, to a cigar shop, some scenes in the street next to some of Las Vegas' iconic street art. We did some photos there as well. And there's this one staircase that is, you know, particularly, it's kind of a landmark in downtown, and a lot of people go there for their photo shoots. So, I got this portfolio done, and I reached out to about 10 people, and I showed them the proofs. And then I mentioned on Facebook that there were proofs that I showed like one or two of the proofs on my Facebook to create some engagement around the fact that I was going to be releasing my new portfolio. And a couple of people in the comments said, "Oh yeah, they mentioned the fact that they had seen the actual link to the portfolio." And then somebody I know outside of business said, "Well, I didn't see these pictures." Mm-hmm. And what I actually did was delete their comment and pretend like I never saw it. and hope that they got the message that if they went back and checked later that it disappeared, that was for a reason. And the reason is very simple. Even though this person is actually, close to me in some areas of my life, they're not somebody who has the status to comment on my business. They would not, in my view, based on my experience with them, give me feedback that would be valuable in this exercise. Yeah. So therefore, I did not ask them. And that simply says they did not have the status with me to give me feedback on my branding portfolio of personal photos.
Yeah.
Doesn't make them a bad person. In fact, they're a very good person. I love them dearly. But they don't have the lens. And the feedback they would give would be something like, oh, you've always been so handsome. Well, I don't fucking need to know that. What I need to know is, what is it about these photos, the artistic value, the poses, the backgrounds, the expressions, the postures? Which one should I use for the headshot? Which one should I use for the one sheet? Which one should be on which page of the website? Which ones would be good for my publicity portfolio? Which one should I probably just throw away? Which one should I use for my dating profiles? These are the questions I need asked. So I'm going to ask people who are competent to answer that. So the reason I bring that up is when it comes to emotions and conversations, sometimes we may feel, and I want to get your thoughts on this, that regardless of their job title, their position in the dynamic via us, we just don't feel that they're the type of person who should be saying what they're saying. Now, how do you deal with that?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So much good stuff here.
Yeah.
I'm scribbling down a bunch of different things here.
We can
go in so many different directions.
Yeah. Well, subscribe to the podcast and listen to it again. I tell our listeners that too.
That's great. I wanted to come back to number one that you said, because I loved it, which is that there's no such thing as the truth. And this is the fundamental to everything that we're talking about here. Every time you're looking at any situation, you're wearing a certain set of glasses.
Yep.
And there is always an option to take those glasses off and put on another pair. And so just realizing that puts people at such, it gives you choice in situations where you feel like you're stuck. And I think that's the biggest unlock that can happen by doing this kind of work, is recognizing, hey, I'm noticing I feel a particular way about this. I'm noticing that I'm telling myself a story about the situation. And if that's causing stress for me, I have an option to take these glasses off and wear a different set and look at the situation differently. And so that's the kind of empowering bit around there's no truth, is that you can create a lot of the experiences you want. And the biggest benefit of that is experiencing less stress.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I wanted, that was coming up for me, what you said. And then I think the second piece is really related to that, which is to say, and everyone else is wearing a pair of glasses as well. And you can believe all you want that yours is the right lens and theirs is the wrong lens, but there is a way to look at it from their point of view. So there is always a way to find a win-win or some kind of a negotiation in a situation if that serves you best. Sometimes it's worthwhile to stay on two sides of the spectrum and to just have the conflict and let it be. But if you're looking to find a common ground or looking to align and move forward, there is always a way.
Yeah.
And then as far as the last topic that you talked about around both the constructive feedback, but also just feedback in general, right? There's a transmitter. Somebody's got to give feedback. Somebody's giving feedback. Somebody's receiving feedback. And you want to give feedback when you are, if a lot of people tend to just give feedback, like you said, just because they feel like it or because they're looking at a situation and they just sort of fall right into that problem solver. Oh, I have an opinion here and I want to share it instinct. But when we give feedback, we want to be aware of what is our intention for that. What is, how invested are we in an outcome here? And why does it serve us to give that feedback? And so if it's part of your job and you're the manager and you're in charge of this particular outcome and you have somebody on your team and technically you're accountable to make sure that outcome happens, then it is part of your job and it's part of you becoming successful. A critical part of you becoming successful is providing that feedback and helping the other person align and understand what they're expected to do. And so you're going to give that feedback. And when you give that feedback, how the other person takes it really has nothing to do with you. Because the other person may not be ready for it. Like you said, they may not want to hear it. They may not want to hear it from you, or they may be particularly sensitive about something, and there may be something else that's coming up for them that's causing them to resist it. But that doesn't, that should not be the reason you don't give the feedback if you're invested in the outcome. At the same time,
right.
What you're saying, when you're on the other side, when you're the one that's receiving the feedback, there's also a question to be asked here around, does this person's feedback matter to me? Is there an impact on me and my success, whether I listen to or don't listen to this feedback? And so you've got to have that lens on to understand how you want to take that feedback. And again, you want to be aware of the emotions that are coming up. I'm feeling defensive, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling upset, I'm feeling annoyed, or I'm feeling open. And all of those are lenses as well that you have the choice to wear depending on the situation.
Yeah. So Divya, you've kind of figured out that my show kind of rides the edge sometimes. I'd like to ask your indulgence and letting me take you through another scenario. Would that be okay?
Yeah, sure. Let's hear it.
Okay. So this is something, I don't know your current social status, nor is it really my concern or my business, but you may deal with this, and I've actually done social experiments where I know that this happens, that as a woman and as, candidly an attractive woman, you probably hear, I'm not even going to say probably, I know it happens. You get a lot of comments from men that have a charge to them, shall we say, in places and conversations where it's not appropriate. Is this a true or false statement, or a factual or non-factual statement?
It's less true.
Less true?
These days, yes.
Less true, but it has happened, correct? And it's also happened to other women, you know.
Sure, absolutely.
Right. So
it's a thing that happens.
Right. So when I hear this happening, and also when I see cases in the news, for some reason, it happened. The ones that really jump out seem to happen in direct messages on LinkedIn. Now, you're on LinkedIn, as am I. And what is LinkedIn? That's a place where people go to talk business. I mean, it was originally conceived as a place to network for your next job, but now it's evolved, but it's still really a business forum. So when you're in a business mode, is that generally a space where you're doing a lot of flirtation, either giving or receiving?
No.
Okay. Let's say there's a woman and this can also work, we can also reverse that where it's the woman doing it to the man or between two men or between two women or whatever. But let's say that we'll just use the man and woman thing. A man messages a woman on LinkedIn and says, by the way, do you know that you're really beautiful? I think you're hot in that blouse in your picture. That's going to come across as what?
Pleasing, inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's say that you're in a situation where you're single, you're looking to mingle, and you go to a local, hangout place, and there are people around, you're meeting people, and that same man comes up to you, you get into a conversation, you're enjoying the conversation, and he says, by the way, I really love that blouse, I think it looks really good on you. Would it necessarily be creepy?
Not necessarily. I think I see where you're going here.
Uh-huh, yep. same two people, same message, different dynamics, different scenes. So the reason I bring this up, and it kind of goes back again to status, is and this is something that I learned from a friend of mine who's a dating coach and a seduction teacher, is that who works with men to help them succeed with women, is that one of the challenges of paying a woman a compliment, and this also works, in all the other types of gender-related back and forth as well, is that if you give them a compliment, it may backfire because they may not believe it themselves. Like if I were to go up to a woman and say, I think you're really beautiful. If her truth is that she's actually very ugly and unattractive, that could backfire on me. And going back to status, she could say, well, who are you to comment on that? You haven't earned that status with me. You haven't captured my interest enough where my physical attractiveness should be your concern. Keep that to yourself. So again, I think a lot of this goes back to, and now we're talking about some of the emotions that play into this. Mm-hmm. And, is it, should this person be saying it? And am I able to receive it because I believe it or don't believe it? And that's where, to me, emotion comes in, because you're having the emotional reaction of, this person is giving me this feedback. This person is giving me this, well, we use the word criticism. This person is giving me this praise, but I don't believe it. I don't see this in myself. So I can't accept this. And their emotions are going to get in the way, where that could actually be a valuable message for them to receive, because it's in the perspective of somebody from the outside looking in.
Yeah. I mean, what you're describing is exactly why this work is so important at all levels, for you to be able to give the feedback, get your emotions out of the way, and be able to give the feedback when you need to, so that you can achieve XYZ goal, whatever it is. There's something that, some purpose that is serving. And for you to be able to have that awareness around, what are the emotions of mine, or the beliefs that are limiting me, or the past experiences that are limiting me, in order to accept that feedback as a way to grow. And so that commitment to growth is extremely important for you to be able to navigate any kind of situation like this. And between, when it comes to that dynamic between two people, regardless of the context, whether this is a work context or more one that's, you know, on the personal side, like you're talking about, trust is key. Between every two people, you need to have trust. On a team, you need to have trust between every pair of people on that team, in order for that whole team to operate effectively. And if that trust is not there, then you're going to constantly be running into these situations where that lack of trust is showing up as all of these other emotions that are impacting the way you're interpreting those messages.
Yeah. And I think, and again, I think that this, again, this is why I'm so interested in this conversation. I think that is very challenging. So, to go to one of the questions you want us to share, how do you think that achieving emotional clarity impacts, let's go beyond conversation, now let's go to decision-making and goal-setting in a leadership context.
So when I think about, you talked about kind of the hierarchy of emotions, the hierarchy of clarity earlier. And essentially, if you can kind of picture a pyramid, like a Maslow's hierarchy of needs sort of pyramid with four levels, I like to think about it as emotional clarity is the basis. It's the foundation. It's at the bottom. And when we have that clarity, sitting above it is decisions. So clarity around our decisions. Above that is clarity around our goals. Above that is clarity around our communication. So let's work backwards from there. In the situation that we were talking about here, where let's move on from feedback. Let's say you've got to go and pitch your investors or your entire team. You've got to sell them on a vision. And so there's a conversation, there's a presentation that you're preparing to go and have this this big pitch, right?
Uh-huh.
So you're preparing your slides, you're preparing what you're going to say, but none of that is going to be effective if you haven't decided, what is my goal in pitching this to you? So what am I trying to ask the audience to do? What is it that I'm trying to get them to buy into, right? So that goal has to be set. Well, in order for us to have clarity on that goal of what it is that we want, we have to have decided, this is the choice, this is the vision, this is the strategy, and this is the goal that we need to achieve in order to move forward. So there's a decision layer that has to have happened before that. And in order for us to have made that decision, we have to have the conviction that this is the right decision. So we have to get over, or we have to recognize and process our anxiety around, am I leading the team in the right direction? Is this the thing that's going to make us successful? We have to have processed the self-doubt around it, or how am I really the person to be doing this? Am I really the one that can lead the team? So all of those emotions are underneath all of those decisions. And we have to have made that decision with clarity. Uh-huh. So that we can set that goal and kind of come into that room and say, okay, I'm going to go in here and I'm going to pitch everyone on this idea so that we can, you know, pivot or whatever, let go of this team or restructure or whatever. There's some goal that we have around it. And once we have the clarity at all of those levels, that's when we're able to go out there and really deliver a solid pitch. And so all of it is related. There are all these cascading levels that need to be worked through in order to get out there and be able to say the thing with clarity.
Right. So to me, that comes down partially to the emotions around self-belief.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I know just for myself, there have been times when I've been called upon to deliver a certain message. And depending on how I felt about myself or where I was that day or in that moment, I was either more or less feeling like I was able to do it. Because self-belief is something that can also change from day to day, in my view.
Yes.
Even hour to hour, even minute to minute. I know what it feels like to need to be in a place where I have my emotions and my self-belief aligned in order to deliver some sort of messaging, whether it's to a client, whether it's to a group, whether it's to somebody in one of my many dynamics. But 2 minutes before that happened, something else came along and emotionally gut punched me and threw me into a total state of discombobulation. Yeah. So not only is my belief now in question, you know, regardless of the whole reason excuse thing, because you know the reason's there, regardless of the excuse, that in that moment, not only am I dealing with the fact that now my belief is kind of rattling from me hitting the side of the head with a hammer, I'm also dealing with the repercussions of that's actually exactly what happened, and I haven't even been able to take a moment to step aside and recombobulate.
Yeah. Gosh, it can be so hard. Yes, self-belief is so critical and something that is not, we can never just take it for granted. It's not going to ever just be there. And we are, every moment is, it's dynamic. There's things changing, the context changing, something else in our life or internally or externally can change to shift that level of self-belief.
And, yeah.
And, you know, in coaching, we talk about gremlins. Are you familiar with this idea or this term?
I am, but I want you to explain it to our listeners.
Yeah, sure. So the idea of a gremlin, we kind of think about it as gremlin energy that sometimes gets in the way. And so you can think about it, hopefully everyone can identify with this voice inside your head, your inner critic or saboteur gremlin, you can call it any of these things, that's telling you that in some way you're not good enough or enough of something, or you're too, you know, loud, obnoxious, yeah, too shy, you know, all of those things. So it's like one of those messages that's in some way telling you that you're not enough.
Yeah.
And that energy, those gremlins, that energy actually exists inside your body for a reason. It actually comes with us from our childhood. And when we're a child, the purpose of that energy, that message that we heard and that we formed in our mind, was to protect us. And it was either to protect us from some physical harm or physiological harm or some need that we might have had to keep us safe, but also sometimes to protect us from being left out socially, because that's kind of one of our fundamental needs, is to be able to connect with other people. That goes back to, you know, the days when we needed our community to actually survive the dangers that in the environment that we were living in. And so essentially, these messages that might be coming up and telling us, like, hey, stay small, because if you don't keep quiet about this thing, that group of people, that group of kids over there is going to exclude you. And then if they know that you feel this way, they're not going to include you, right? So you've got to keep quiet about your opinions. And then that message is what's allowed us to become friends with this group of people and maintain that friendship. And somehow now we've internalized that, hey, stay small and stay quiet, even when you're in a group of executives. When you've got a seat at the table, but stay small and stay quiet, because if you say an opinion they don't agree with, they're not gonna look at you or believe in you or you know, respect you. And so that same message just can stay with us throughout our lives. And until we can recognize, like, hey, this is coming up, that gremlin energy is here to protect me. And until you can develop a relationship with that energy to say, like, hey, thanks for being here, but I actually don't need you because you're holding me back from my goals. And that's what we have to continuously do to be able to build that self-belief And that's different for all of us. And it shows up in different ways for all of us, but it's true for everyone.
Yeah. And, you know, that's part of peer pressure as well. Conform, get along. I have two real quick anecdotes here. One of the things we see on social media is this occasional debate for clicks over whether Androids or iPhones are better. Now, Android devices are better. I use Androids. They are superior. iPhones suck. I'm stating that as a fact because I can. No, I'm halfway kidding. You may be one of those iPhone people who's about to say, get an iPhone. Anyway, but I saw one of these threads and I saw somebody say, you know, who's on the iPhone side of the debate, quite in all seriousness, they weren't even joking. They say, you know, I think it's about time these Android users assimilate already and just get iPhones. And so I commented also in seriousness. I said, assimilate how? What are we going to do to the Android users? Are we going to send them to camps? And she thought I was joking, says, no, I'm not joking. You said assimilate. So are you saying that people who don't use iPhones and who use Android should be sent to camps and re-educated because you're looking to assimilate them? You're looking to mentally reprogram them to follow a propaganda line? And that may sound facetious, but think about that. When we're told to stay small, to fit into a group, or to be accepted. I remember when I worked in corporate, there was this whole message of, you know, just keep your head down. And even then, I mean, of course, I was 23 years old, and that's back when I still knew everything. I would say, hell with that. I'll keep my head up. Mm-hmm. If you don't like it, take a swing. See what happens. They considered me unemployable, but, you know, there's a reason why I'm an entrepreneur. And there's a reason why I've stuck with it for 21 years through the roller coaster ride, which has had some pretty high, big highs and some pretty low dips. Mm-hmm. Now, another thing I see, and the example I'm gonna explain to you goes back to gender discrimination and gender basis, and it's from 50 years ago. But it also speaks generally to the idea that if you are this, regardless of whether it's race, sex, you know, race, gender, orientation, just how you dress, what color you dye your hair or whatever, that your opinions will be considered more or less valuable based on these extraneous factors. So some of our listeners are familiar with a TV show called MASH about the surgeons in Korea. And in the early years of the show, there's a story that got out that still gets repeated every once in a while, that the first set of actors, the original cast, would have, you know, their meetings to discuss plot lines and everything. And Loretta Swit, who played Major Houlihan, would make suggestions, and they would say, oh yeah, Loretta, that's nice, but we're not going to do that. So McClane Stevenson, who played Colonel Blake, began to notice this trend that almost anything she said got shot down out of hand. So he would hang back for a little bit. He wouldn't do it immediately, and maybe it wouldn't even be at the same meeting, but it might be at a different meeting. He would remember what she had suggested, and then he would suggest it. And they would say, oh yeah, McClane, that's a great idea. Let's do that. And so he kept track of it, and he wrote down the dates that Loretta made the recommendations and got shut down, and the dates that he made the recommendations and they adopted him. And he went to the executives and he said, you know, why is it that Loretta keeps making these suggestions and you shoot her down, but when I make the exact same suggestion, you approve it immediately? It's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They were dismissing her suggestions because she was a woman and she was actually the only woman in the primary cast.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we can leave gender out of that, and we can go even to just perception of who you are. I mean, maybe it could be one person in the room has an MBA and the other one doesn't, or one person is younger than the other or older than the other, and just on that basis they could say, oh, they don't know what they're talking about, they don't have the experience, they don't really know. But then somebody else delivers the exact same message, and due to implied credibility, all of a sudden it's a great idea.
And it happens all the time.
Yeah.
What you're talking about happens all the time in the workplace.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's hard to not feel victimized by that when you're experiencing it. And it's hard not to internalize that dialogue. And so sometimes, there's a lot of different things we can talk about here. But when I'm working with an individual, the best we can do is whatever we can do together, right? So we talk about what's in your control to be able to shift that dynamic. And I like to think about it as, you know, it's not in your control for somebody else to respect you. So stop trying, stop having that be your, the thing that gets you, your goal. If your goal is I need to earn their respect, then I mean, good luck, because they are wearing glasses and that are essentially, they've already decided whether you're worthy of respect or not, and it has nothing to do with you. So, what people think about you is none of your business, right? And so instead, let's talk about what is in your control. Your self-belief is in your control. You being clear about what it is that you need to do and you showing up and doing that work as well as possible, that's in your control. You choosing not to be in that environment, that's in your control. These are the things that you can actually do. So when I'm working with an individual, this is what we talk about. Or you advocating for your rights, your needs, that's absolutely in your control as well. If you're in a place, if you're in an environment that's supportive enough to actually listen, right? So those are all the kinds of things that are in your control. And letting go of what all these other people think and realizing like that's all on them. That's all right on them, and it's their loss. And that's kind of an empowering narrative that you can have going into those conversations. And respect will follow when it needs to, from the people that you need to get it from. It's different though, if I'm working in more of a team dynamic, and being able to surface these things is what's most important. So that in the example that you were talking about, right? It's like, let's show you the data, let's show you the information, and let's surface this and show you exactly like here's what's actually happening, and let's talk about this. What's going on? And can we actually talk about this tension? Can we talk about this bias and shift it?
Yeah. Okay, so we're almost at the end of our hour here. There are two things. I know you have a gift for our listeners, and I'm going to share that on your behalf in just a moment. But in general, for all the leaders, current leaders, aspiring leaders who are listening to this podcast right now, what is one piece of advice you'd give them on making hard conversations easy through the lens of emotional clarity?
Try and understand how you're feeling before you go into that conversation. And you can do that by talking about it to somebody, writing about it. But if you can even just give it a label, I'm feeling X, before you have that conversation, that actually will de-intensify that emotion, and it'll help you see more clearly, and it'll help you have a better conversation.
What just jumped out at me, Divya, is the five whys. So let's say I was going to put a label on it, and I'm going to say, I feel anxious going into that conversation. So now we can ask, why do I feel anxious? And then once we answer that, we identify the source of the anxiety. Well, this person intimidates me. Why do they intimidate me? Is it because they're too loud? They're too tall? They hover over you? They use bigger words than you do? They give off an energy that you just find intimidating? Okay, so what is it about that? Let's say that they just use really big words. What is it about people? And eventually you find out it has something to do with your third grade teacher. But now you understand the source of it. So just like you trace a river all the way to the source, that little spring where the water first comes out of the ground, now you know where it originally derives from, and you can get the nourishment from that.
Yeah.
So I like to combine those two things. So the invitation Divya has for our listeners today, that's those of you out there in the world, it's a guide called How to Do Hard Things. So if you're a leader, you may be doing one hard thing after another, and we think that we could do it all if we just had more time, but it's actually, according to Divya, clarity that is the real key to effective leadership. So when you download the guide, it's absolutely free. She's going to share with you five reflections that are told through personal anecdotes, and you've heard a lot of personal anecdotes both ways in this conversation, that will help you in some way reframe how you think about this whole scarcity of time, this whole idea of, well, there's 24 hours in a day and everybody else has it. And instead, focus on finding the clarity you need to do the hard things well. So the link to that is something I can't even pronounce. And if I try and spell it out, I'm going to tell you right now that what you need to do is go to our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com, which is probably where you are right now. If you're on something like Spotify or iHeartRadio or something, just look in the show notes. You'll see it there. And go to this. In fact, I'll say it out loud one time. It's content.divyaalitha, if I'm pronouncing it right. So it's divyaalitha.com.
Let me correct that real quick. Laalitha.com.
Okay. /hard things guide. So go there, download it now. I'm going to check it out myself. I think I'm going to find it pretty interesting for me. And if you have any questions about that, I'll let Divya or I know. And if you reach out to her through social media, say, for example, you find her on LinkedIn, I mentioned you can find her there. Please let her know that you heard about her on the Business Creators Radio Show. And I'm sure she'll be open to having a conversation with you about what you can do to help make hard conversations easy and lead with clarity. And with that, Divya, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor, and believe me, an education.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.